It's just win, baby, for the Greenies. LSU had a little lack of spy technique up in Tuscaloosa. And the Saints come home after beating the Colts, extend the winning streak to 2 games as they beat the Bears. All right, all that coming up on this week's edition of Fazan on Football. All right, welcome to this week's edition of Fazan on Football. All right, let's get right into Tulane Greenway. Travel to Greenville, South Carolina to take on the East Carolina Pirates, who were 1-7 at the time. Tulane was 7-1. And Tulane escapes with a 13-10 victory. Now, it was one of those deals where, here again, East Carolina jumped out on Tulane 10-0. And it was a typical, I mean, you could just see what's going to happen. Tulane wasn't. They were not ready to play that game. They were not fired up to play 1-7. East Carolina, you know, deep into the season. I mean, you know, coming off a couple of tight games with Rice and North Texas. And so, they go to Greenville, and they do what they have to do. They come back with the W. And after East Carolina got up 10-0, Tulane shut them down, shut them out. So I know a lot of people are wringing their hands right now. Oh, my God, what's going on with Tulane? Look, man, Tulane's 8-1. Be happy. Air Force lost to Army, which puts Tulane squarely in the driver's seat for getting the New Year's Six Bowl. They went out. They got to beat Texas San Antonio. And I see the 8-1, it's 9. I got 3 games. They had Texas San Antonio, SMU, and another team I'm blanking out on. Anyway, but they're 3 absolute winnable games. And they're going to play better as the competition increases. So I look for Tulane to keep on winning and win their conference once again, and go play a New Year's Day New Year's Six Bowl, and who knows, it could be playing LSU. Could happen. It could happen. Tulsa is the other opponent I'm thinking of, and that's who they play this week at home. So come on back home. Beat up on Tulsa, who at this moment, Tulsa is what? 3-6, I believe? Tulane 8-1. So you come home, you pick up on, you get a 3-6 Tulsa on the road. You know they checked out. They're not going anywhere. But you gotta get these opponents, Tulane, and stomp them. You gotta stomp them. Get those style points like my boy Eric Asher likes to talk about. And let's get you into a New Year's Six Bowl. All right. Good job, Tulane. Another victory. Get Tulane, gets the dub. All right, be right back. We'll talk about what happened in Birmingham with a little spy gate situation. Be right back. And welcome back to Fazan on Football. Okay, let's get right into LSU. Alabama. Now listen, I don't horribly mind losing to a top 10 team on the road at night in the Southeastern Conference in a game where you lost by 2 touchdowns. And really and truly, the difference in the game was one huge, incredibly big turnover. Now, I say that's the difference in the game. But there were a couple other things. One of the most glaring thing was the inability to stop Alabama's quarterback, inability to adjust. Either the inability to or the not wanting to make an adjustment to Alabama's quarterback running ramp shot. I mean, just running. He's still running. If he wanted to run for 500 yards against LSU, he could have. And what amazes me, what absolutely blows my mind, is that LSU didn't do a damn thing about it. Not one. They played scared. They dropped everybody back in coverage as far back as they could go. They rushed just a couple of linemen. I don't remember seeing blitzes. I think the times they did blitz, they worked. They didn't get the sack. I think they may have got one sack, but they made Milroe throw the ball, hurry his throw. But they didn't stick with it. They played this passive, scared as shit, a cowardly zone defense, and just opened up running lanes for Milroe to go through. And as big and as fast as he is, he took advantage of it. And the touchdown runs he had wasn't even touched. He wasn't touched. And there's 11 players on the football field on your side of the ball, and not one person can lay a hand on the quarterback when he's running for a score. That's bad. That's beyond bad. That's unbelievably bad. It's beyond comprehension. You could say maybe he has a couple of runs a game. Now, you could say, well, what about Jaden Daniels, Alabama? He was running all over Alabama. Jaden Daniels being chased. Jaden Daniels had to juke people. Jaden Daniels had to outrun people. Milroe, all he had to do was run. All he had to do was take the ball and run it. Because there was nobody chasing him. There was one person who had a shot at Milroe on their second possession. That was Harold Perkins, and he missed the tackle. That was it. Other than that, nobody even came close. And that's bad. And the reason it's bad is because it shows. Now, I thought, listen, I'm going to keep saying I'm still a Brian Kelly fan. I'm still a Brian Kelly fan, and I still think he was a good hire. A great hire. As far as getting into a program that is down and out. LSU's program was so bad. It was as bad as a team that was coming off the death penalty sanctions that the NCAA put on Southern SMU years ago because of the lack of players on your team. You didn't have players. You had less than 35 scholarship players on your team when Brian Kelly took over. Okay, I get it. Now, his first season was a big-time success, considering what the expectations were. Now, that's a double-edged sword, as we all know. Once you reach a certain amount of success, now it's expected of you. Now it's not a surprise. Now, as far as building a program, I have complete confidence in Brian Kelly. As far as on-field decisions, up to now, this season, Les Miles made better decisions. I'm just going to put it out there. Brian Kelly, on the field, during these games this season, is just Les Miles with a spit shine. That's all he is. He's a slick back, well-dressed, well-articulated, well-mannered, nails manicured, probably pedicured, and version of Les Miles. Because to come out and say, on your Monday press conference, you know what, in retrospect, I think we would have maybe employed a spy situation. Maybe tried that. Maybe we would have employed a spy tactic. I tell you, this man's verbal diarrhea is up there with the best of them. He's got words for everything. And he's so articulate and slick. If he wanted to, he would work his way up from salesperson at an auto dealership to sales manager to he'd own that dealership before long. Because he's a talker. He's slick now. He's slick. And he's smart to a degree. But to not use a spy, to not break up and change up what you were doing defensively, make any adjustments, and each of your losses, it just shows a lack of, I don't know, a lack of composure, maybe a lack of on the spot decision making, or maybe like a panic that sets over you where you freeze. You know, sometimes when people panic, they freeze and they can't think straight. And then after the situation's over and everything's calmed down and your fight or flight system in your body has calmed down, and you think, oh, you know what, man, I could have just done this. And then the panic would have went away. I think his fight or flight system in his body, and you have absolutely zero control over your fight or flight response. Zero. It's an automatic response. In other words, your brain just goes into one mode, fight or flight. And you either fight or you fly. And another word for fly is to just cope with a situation, is to run. Another way to run is to freeze and hope it goes away. And that's what Brian Kelly does sometimes. And the three losses, his team has given up over 40 points. Average about, what, 45, 47 points per loss. When his team's winning, when they're flowing great, everything's going wonderful, great coach, makes great decisions. And close games, when his team is able to play with the ability or his plan is working, like last year against Alabama, at home when he beat them, makes great decisions. But that situation, when it's panic mode and nothing you're doing's working, you can't think of what to do, that's not good. That's not good. And to say that you should have used the spy, that's just not good enough. That's not appropriate. That's not good enough. That's a fireable offense, in my opinion. If I have a coach, when the chips are down, and ship's going crazy, and you don't know what the hell to do about it, you can't get out of your own way, and you don't know what to do to change what's going on bad during the game until Tuesday or Monday, 2 days later, I can't have you. I can't have you. I don't care how slick you are. I don't care how articulate you are. I don't care how well manicured your nails look, how dressed, nicely dressed you are. Can't do it, man. And that's the thing that separates, that's always going to separate him from a guy like Nick Saban, who can see what's going on and on a dime change it. On a dime. Alabama went into halftime and LSU went into halftime 21-21. Both quarterbacks were running crazy against each other. Reports on it, Nick Saban went berserk on his assistant coaches. Why are we not spying Daniels? What in the hell? Why are we not spying? Not only why are we not spying, we are going to put a spy on Jaden Daniels and just live with that. And they forced him to throw a pass at the beginning of the fourth quarter. and it got tipped at the line and it got interception, ball game. Ball game, because you knew right then and there LSU was not going to stop Alabama, and that put them up two scores. That broke serve, so to speak, in tennis terms. So you could talk about everything you want to talk about what happened in that game. But the fact that LSU, people blaming Matt House, the defensive coordinator, yeah, you can blame him what you want, but the blame falls squarely on Brian Kelly's shoulders. No further. No further. And it scares the shit out of me as an LSU fan, or it should scare an LSU fan, that this is the kind of decision making you're going to have in panic mode situations. You're going to find out what he would have done 2 days later. Or if he ever makes the mistake of saying it out loud in a press conference again, because believe me, taking a lot of heat. It's full. It's coaching, it's malpractice. That's coaching malpractice 101. Okay. You come out with a plan, this is what we're going to do. I mean, I told Eric, I said, look, Milrose, all he does, the only thing he does well is running through deep. I would have a three deep zone, three guys deep, and put pressure on him. Try to get him to get rid of the ball, quit. It looks like they came out with that kind of situation, and then he was able to solve it. Didn't change. Once he changed, I'd say, you know what? Screw the zone. We're going man to man, and we blitz it. Because, I mean, I would have done it after the first quarter, but even, you know, after the first half. Hell with the zone. We go on man-to-man. We blitz it. He can't throw short. You saw he had wide-open receivers. Alabama could have had two more touchdowns. Well, they probably scored on receivers that he missed. He threw an interception to LSU, which the guy, I think it was this guy, Sam is his name, misjudged the ball in flight and didn't get come up with the interception. That would have been LSU's big turnover that they needed. But no. And then after that play, Alabama comes down and scores. There's another play where he's got a guy wide open around a 10-yard line. He throws it in the stands so far over his head. He's got other receivers wide open. He's not a quarterback. He'll never be a quarterback in the NFL. Mark my words. But Brian Kelly didn't do anything. He put no pressure on him. Zero. He's got, and then what blows me away is what he's doing with Harold Perkins. Les Miles knows better. I rip Les Miles' ass every week during the season at LSU because of poor game management. At least he knew what to do with players. At least he knew, oh, I have Leonard Fournette. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hand him the ball. You know, I have Devin White. You know what I'm going to do? Let him play linebacker. I have Arden Key. You know what? Let's let him rush the passer. Well, that was Ogeron, but you know where I'm going with this. Imagine having an elite. Brian Kelly talks about you got to be elite. If you want to beat a team at their place, top 10 team at their place, you got to be elite. Well, you also have to coach elite. You have to coach on an elite level, which means putting your best players in the damn position for them to be at their best, which means making Hal Perkins a pass rusher and a spy. Not to mention what he's doing with Weeks, who should be playing what Harold Perkins is playing. And a guy like Deshaun Womack, five-star lineman, they get in a play or two. And then you hear his explanation. Well, we just don't have freshmen. They're still learning. They're not there yet. Who the hell's there? Who are they not? Who's above in front of Weeks or Deshaun Womack that's so good they can't get on the field while LSU's giving up 50 fucking points? 50 points. You mean to tell me you don't have anybody you could try? You mean to tell me these guys who are freshmen are not as good as the ones who are giving up 50 damn points? I'm telling you, until he proves me different, he's less miles with a spit shine. That's all I can tell you. All right, come right back, talk about the Florida game. So I'm aggravated right now. All right, welcome back to Fasano Football. All right, enough about the Alabama fiasco. Let's turn our attention to Florida. Got a buddy that lives in Jacksonville, Florida. He's a big Gators fan. And when I texted him after the Alabama game, told him they'd probably be facing Garrett Nussmeier this week, his response was, "We'll probably give up 60. To which I responded, "LSU would probably give up 61. So apparently Florida's defense is doing as poorly as LSU's. So it is what it is. I know a lot of people wanted Billy Napier to be the head coach of LSU. I was in the column of he wasn't my first choice, but if LSU settled on him, I wouldn't have had a problem with it. It's because of his success with ULL. Now, I understand he's not doing great at Florida. But being a head coach at the University of Florida is similar to being a head coach at University of Texas or Texas A&M or Florida State or Miami or TCU. The competition for the talent in those states, especially Florida, is beyond fierce. You know, most kids in Louisiana, most kids who grew up an exceptional ball player, dream of playing for LSU. So LSU will get, out of the 10 best players in the state, 7, 8, 9, maybe all of them. 70% on up will come to LSU. Kids grow up in the state of Florida. Their dream school is Florida, Miami, Florida State, Georgia, Alabama, LSU, you name it. Tennessee. You got states, you got the whole entire United States of America recruiting the state of Florida. And the reason I say I wouldn't have been sorry if LSU would have hired Billy Napier is, it's a whole different ballgame recruiting Louisiana when you're the only major program in the state that is talent rich. It's like having the only oil well in Texas. You know, you get all the talent. You get all the oil. And so it's not easy. It's a lot easier to bring in talent to Louisiana State University than it is to the University of Florida. And I know people say, well, Florida's a talent-rich state. Florida's a flagship station of university of that state. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. When you got schools recruiting like, I only mentioned the big ones, Florida, Florida State, and Miami. You have South Florida, which is in Tampa. I think the biggest city in Florida, maybe this, you know, either Tampa or Miami. You have South Florida, you have Central Florida, you have Florida Atlantic. You have Florida International. Plus you have a bunch of other little smaller schools than that. And you have, like I said, Alabama comes in and takes one or two. LSU always gets a couple. Georgia, North, South Carolina, even Tennessee. They all recruit Florida. And I say the same about Jimbo Fisher and A&M. People think, wow, A&M's a big school. They had the 12th man. They had that big old billions and billions of dollars of endowment. They can win. They should be able to win, get every player. No, not necessarily. It's growing up playing football in Louisiana is just different. It's different than any other state. It's a small state population-wise. It's a poor state because you have corrupt politicians. It should be a rich state, but it's not because it's run by crooks. And I'm telling you, Plainfield LSU is a religion. They don't have that in Tech, in Florida. They don't have the same feeling of going to Florida or going to Texas A&M as kids growing up in Louisiana do to go to LSU. Just don't. I'm just telling you, it's different. It's just different. Having said all of that, LSU's playing at home. They're battered and bruised, just like I said. You play Alabama 1 week, there's a big letdown physically and emotionally the next week, depending on how that game went. Last year, LSU was as high can be, beating Alabama. They came back and damn near lost to the last place Arkansas Razorbacks, who I don't think had an SEC victory going into the LSU game. So, this week you're walking, you know, Jaden Daniels isn't the only one hurt. It's going to be a couple of people hurt. You're playing Florida, who they coming off a bye. They're well rested. They were embarrassed by Arkansas the week before last. So they've had 2 weeks to stew on it. And they would love nothing better, nothing more than to come to Baton Rouge and beat LSU. So, last I heard, Jaden Daniels had one more test he had to pass in a concussion protocol in order to qualify for Saturday night's game. So we'll see what happens. If Jaden Daniels plays, I think LSU wins. I think if Garrett Nussmeier has to play, I think LSU wins, although by not as much as if Daniels would play. Or maybe they would. Who knows? You never can tell with this LSU-Florida matchup. For years, Florida was the hands-down absolute favorite. LSU had no shot beat them. You got the shoe game where the guy threw the shoe 20 yards and LSU kicked a 57-yard field goal in the fog to win. You got the game where Terry and Price Davis ran for 300 yards almost. And Florida were huge favorites in those games. You got last year, LSU coming off a bad loss in Tennessee. They go to Gainesville and they kick Florida's ass. So you never know. You never know. So having said that, I'm going to go ahead and pick the LSU Fighting Tigers to bounce back and beat Florida 42-41. All right, be right back. Talk about the Saints win over that strong, vaunted Monsters of the Midway, Chicago Bears. The Bears. Welcome back to Fasano Football. All right, now the Saints Bears. Well, the Saints return home after going on the road and beating the Colts in a game that went well into the fourth quarter before that outcome was determined. And they come home, play, Colts had a backup quarterback, and they come home and play the Bears against their backup quarterback. They get three interceptions, recover two fumbles. Bears miss a field goal, and the Saints win in a squeaker. One score. So while you're happy the Saints got the win, and believe me, in the NFL, a win is a win is a win. You don't judge them. You don't scoff at them. You don't apologize for them. They beat the Bears at home after, and their defense forced five turnovers, two interceptions by Paulson Adebo, who was named the Defensive Player of the Week for his performance, because he picked off two passes and he caused another fumble, and I think he might even have recovered the fumble he forced. But having said all of that, while you're glad the Saints won, no doubt about it, it does cause a little bit of concern that the win, they didn't win. Now listen, when you have five turnovers, when you create five turnovers, you should beat that team by 30 points. I mean, that's a game where you got five turnovers with the opposition. You scored, let's say you only scored off of three of them. Touchdowns. That's 21 points right there. So, I don't want to criticize the Saints winning a game. I never want to be that. I don't want to be that person. But they just have to do better. You got to do better if you're the Saints on offense. But or do you? You're coming this week. You're playing the Vikings, who just picked up a quarterback who played last week, didn't even know the names of the players on his team. That, you know, that film, I'm sure, is going around social media, or that tape where he's taking snaps on the sideline so the offensive lineman can get the rhythm of his cadence. So here you go, you're playing another backup quarterback. You're playing a Minnesota Vikings team who lost their best wide receiver, maybe the best receiver in football, Justin Jefferson, to an injury, and he's returned to practice this week, but nobody believes he'll play Sunday. So you're probably going to be without their best receiver. And but the Vikings, they keep winning. They're 5-4 as well, I believe. And they're playing at home, which is a tough place to play for any team in Minnesota. It's loud. It's a good crowd. So Saints will have their work cut out for them. I thought Derek Carr played well. He didn't play great, but he played well. He's starting to get more and more comfortable with the offense. Rashid Shaheed continues to excel. Chris Olave caught a nice couple of throws. Couple of catches. I texted my son, Sean, during the game, what do the Saints see in number 21, their running back, Jamal Williams? He is zero threat between the 20s, from 20 to 20. He's zero threat to bust one. He may get you a tough yard and short yarded situations. But they bring him out on first down. And then they hand the ball off to him. I don't get it. I don't understand now. I understand he's a really good pass protector, but so is Alvin Kamara. So why not have Kamara in the game? I don't know. I don't know. Condre Miller got hurt again, so he may miss this week. He's the rookie running back. Carl Granderson continues to play good ball. Mario Davis, Pete Werner. I mean, the defense, there's no problem with the defense. After they got settled in and figured out what the Bears were trying to do, about midway through the third quarter, the defense dominated that game. So, you know, like I say, it was a good win, but not a great win. But you take it. You take it. Now it's off to Minnesota to play the Vikings, like I said, with Josh Hobbs as the quarterback. He's very new to the team. Sure, he doesn't know the playbook. So what you got to do if you're the Saints, don't even worry about rushing him. He's a good mobile quarterback. Just keep him in the pocket. Keep him in the pocket. Force him to beat you with his arm. And force him to beat you, you know, with knowledge of the offense, which I don't think he'll be able to fully grasp it. I just don't. Or limited knowledge of the Vikings offense. If you make him have to think and make the right throws, make the right reads, and all of that good stuff, you should be able with the veteran defense the Saints are, you should be able to confuse him enough to throw him to make him throw a couple of picks. And you know, with the Saints defense this season, the secondary has been, I think they lead the league in interceptions. So, as far as offense is concerned, it's just going to be a matter of Derek Carr and the rest of the guys getting better and better, playing more and more together. This is a big win because you're going into a bye week, and then you had Falcons when you get back from the bye week. So, Minnesota always has a good pass rush, Danielle Hunter. Minnesota, it's always tough to beat at home, but you can. The Saints have done it before. So I'm going to go ahead and back on the bandwagon. Say the Saints make it three in a row, go to 6-4, going into the bye week, and come back, I think, at home and play the Falcons, so in 2 weeks after that. So, all right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Hosanna on Football. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoy bringing it to you. We'll talk again next week.